public hearing and the public hearing on Senate Bill 648A. Andy.
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 648A is a measure that would require a clarification of a list of special needs which would qualify for respite care, and so that it would include behavioral conditions as well as mental illness. It would require the Oregon Lifespan Respite Care Program to provide technical assistance to community programs in a variety of areas. It would replace the Family Support Advisory Council with a new advisory council appointed by the Director of DHS, and it would require this advisory council to meet no fewer than four times per year. It would require DHS to adopt new rules for the program, including but not limiting to related to outcome measures, data collection, statewide minimum standards for respite care providers, and it would expand ways in which respite funds can be used to include provider recruitment, administrative costs associated with technology acquisition, and the purchase of community-based respite care for families.
Thank you, Andy. And we have several people who want to testify. I'll call up two at a time, Catherine White and Lee Gerard. Is that correct, Lee?
Yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Catherine White, and I'm with the Oregon Developmental Disabilities Coalition. And thank you for hearing Senate Bill 648. I wanted to just provide you initially with a quick overview of the program and how it's organized. In the packet of materials you're receiving, there is also some information about respite. And we had been asked previously on the Senate side for any data that was available regarding the importance of respite. You will also see some information of various studies that have been done on the importance of providing caregivers with temporary relief services. And in addition, there is testimony from a number of people who were unable to attend today. So. The original lifespan respite bill passed in 1997, and it was phased in over a period of a number of bienniums. It provided a single point of reference, a single point of entry where families, no matter what their care needs were, would be able to call to try and find a respite provider, whether they were caring for a young child with a disability or an elderly parent, that they would have access to one place in a county that they could call to get access to respite care. And this was in response to a lot of work, a very fragmented system, a lot of work that was being done at local levels, reinventing the wheel. Everybody was kind of focused on developing respite forms and looking into liability and never kind of got beyond that point. And so in response to that, this bill was introduced to establish at the state level someone to provide technical assistance and support to the programs at the local level and to provide a small amount of funding in each county and work on helping people develop local solutions and local collaborations to create a network of respite services in their counties. This bill actually became a model for the lifespan respite bill that was passed at the federal level last year, and it is now being used as a model at the national level. Basically, on the overview of lifespan, is that the original bill set up some state-level coordination, and the state, through a grant process, competitive grant process, gave a small amount of money to each county to create a single lifespan program. And if you look at the amount of funding, you can see that the amount of funding was very small. It was originally intended simply to be seed money to get local communities working together around lifespan respite. At the community level, various organizations would respond to that grant process and become sponsors of lifespan programs. And as you can see, it's a variety of agencies that actually house the lifespan programs, area agencies on aging, child care resource and referrals. Different counties had different solutions to where they would house the lifespan program, but the intent was that that lifespan program should serve across the age and across the need. The specific responsibilities of the lifespan program were to recruit and screen, identify training resources so there wasn't a lot of duplication, matching families and caregivers with someone who was trained and able to provide that lifespan, and then linking families with payment resources. The original structure of the lifespan program was administrative. The funding was administrative. It was up to the local programs to connect people with funding resources that might be located in different programs, to generate local fundraising activities, and to work with local programs. And if you look on the back side of that page, it lists many of the partners that were included in the programs, nonprofit groups, faith-based organizations, county programs, disability, county disability programs, local health systems, DHS, child welfare, et cetera. The vision of lifespan ran into the wall that many human services ran into in 2003 in the budget crisis. And there were a number of things that happened to lifespan respite. One was the loss of full-time staff position at the Department of Human Services. Lacking that position, there was often an inability to provide the technical assistance and support to local programs. The resources at local levels, many of the collaborations, the collaborating partners at the local level had difficulty to continue those kind of collaborations because of their budget pressures. And we saw an increasingly difficult time in accessing additional funds and the ability to maintain the effectiveness and the visibility of the program. That being said, there still is a huge, huge commitment to respite, and I think that we refer to people in the respite system as being respite zealots because there is a huge commitment to providing respite. It is so critically important to families that people are doing a lot with very, very few resources. We feel this bill is very important. While this is a bill that does not have funding attached to it, and some of our efforts are incurring in the Ways and Means process and within the Department of Human Services, we believe this bill is very important because it establishes within the statute, which did not exist, a framework of responsibilities and expectations and accountability for both the state level and the local level programs. Lacking that guidance in statute, the rules for the program did not include some of that that language. It reestablishes a lifespan advisory committee at the state level, which will keep the focus on respite care and help bring back together many of the collaborations that were lost in a number of years ago. And we believe that it has helped just in this discussion to refocus both the state and community levels on respite, and that it will put us in a position that we will be able to seek additional funding in the future once the programs are stabilized and we have the kind of accountability and responsibility language that we can draw on.
Catherine, how are you going to be able to do all this without any funding attached to this?
Madam Chair, many of these things are they are activities that the programs have been engaged in, but there hasn't been the way to get the accountability. We have been having some very, very productive conversations within the Department of Human Services. And I think that Lee can speak to their support of this in terms of refocusing internally activities on respite and how it's being, I mean, we know that some respite is occurring within the different areas in the Department of Human Services. But this is an effort to refocus and re-coordinate many of those efforts. And so the area that is going to be lacking clearly is the money to pay for respite for families. But we're hoping that with creating a position within the department, that some of the opportunities that are out there that we have not been able to take advantage of, grant writing, collaboration with healthcare systems, you know, looking at some of the creative ways we can increase respite, have simply not been available to us. And so, as I say, there are lots of zealots and lots of committed people on this issue.
And we can ask Lee in just a minute. But any other questions of Catherine White? Okay, thank you very much, Catherine. Okay, Lee.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Lee Girard with the Department of Human Services, Seniors and People with Disabilities Division, and I manage the unit that oversees this particular program. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 648, and we believe this bill will improve the existing current Oregon Lifespan Respite Program. Catherine has done an excellent job of kind of giving you an overview of the program, and what I was planning to do was give you kind of some of the highlights of the specific changes in the bill and how they impact what's kind of changes or focuses on the existing program and what that change does. Also, one of the things I'd like to emphasize is that there is now a National Lifespan Respite Act. There isn't currently funding attached to it, but there are very active efforts going on. And there's likely to be national funding in the next couple of years. We believe that these changes will help position Oregon to be more competitive because those will be competitive federal grants. So we believe that this will have a big impact on that. So as Catherine mentioned, the program links families and service providers to trained respite providers, to support groups, to payment resources, and to educational materials to really help to support their abilities to continue to provide care and support to their family members. And this is the program really serves people regardless of their ages or their special needs. While the intent of the program is to support all areas of special needs, Section 1 of the bill adds behavioral conditions as a category of special need. The clarification ensures that service providers for an individual with a behavioral condition will have access to the respite services and payment options available. We felt the folks that crafted this bill felt it was very important to emphasize that, along with the other specific groups that are currently listed in the statute. Section 2, sub 3, directs the department to provide technical assistance to the community-based respite programs. The bill clarifies the types of technical assistance that will be provided, such as program operations, resource development, training, and public awareness. As Catherine mentioned, many of these technical systems items are currently being provided and offered by the department. However, putting these into the statute will strengthen the focus on those areas and the importance of the department actually providing those things and providing that level of support. We really believe that adding this will ensure that those areas are addressed and that it will provide a stronger focus on technical assistance out to the local communities. When the program was first established back in 1997, there was a subcommittee of the Family Support Council created to provide direction to the department around this particular program. That support council hasn't been active in the last few years, and so one of the things that the bill also does is it establishes a separate standalone advisory committee for this, a state level advisory committee for this program, and provides for an ongoing mechanism for that to be kind of put into kind of the formal infrastructure of the program, which we think will be very important. It really, this type of program really needs the buy-in of both state level and community level network to help it to be successful. Finally, the changes in Section 5 require the department to adopt rules addressing program guidelines, performance measures, and standards, and we believe that that will only improve the quality of the service. So that's kind of the final component that relates to the accountability and outcomes issues that Catherine addressed. Chair Tomei and committee members, that's pretty much the substance of my testimony, and I'm available for questions. Or
Catherine had in her testimony had said that there was a loss of a full-time DHS staff person. So has that person been replaced?
At this point, we still have part-time staffing for the position. We haven't recovered from some of the funding cuts that happened. There is some discussion going on within the department about ways for the future to change that and increase the support. That hasn't happened within this biennium, though.
Sounds like this bill would require a lot of the department, so it's just unclear to me how a part-time staff person could do all of these things.
We agree that that's a bit of a struggle. One of the things that we think the bill basically states is that some of these are maze, like some of the issues around the technology is that the funding may be used for those things. So we were hoping that as federal funding is available and we get grant funding, that we'll be able to expand and move beyond some of these things. So we're really hopeful for that. And I know that there are discussions going on within SPD and department leadership about how to in the future to provide staff support for the program. So
thank you, Ms. Gerard. Representative Gelsey, did you have a question?
I did. It was just a matter of clarification. You, the testimony indicated that the Family Support Council hasn't been active for years. That was reinstituted sometime around 2004. Has it stopped meeting since 2005? Is that...
I believe that's the case, but actually Catherine could probably address that since she was an active member of the group.
Madam Chair, Representative Gelser, it has not met since you left.
Representative Helen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is directed to whoever wants to tackle it, I guess. I have been reading in the packet, among other things, there's a letter from Nina Roll, who runs the Family Care Connection in Lincoln County, a program that I'm very familiar with. I know Nina well. Frankly, in reading through her letter relatively quickly while you were talking, it isn't clear to me that it's actually in support of this bill. It says it's regarding this bill, but she goes on at some length to explain the challenges of funding and the significant drop in funding that they've seen a 37% cut. I know that Nina does an outstanding job of trying to bring awareness to the issue. But I think that this letter is also really indicative of the challenge at the local level. The community programs are struggling for some level of stability. And your testimony talks about refocusing on finding funding to pay for the respite care. But the critical need to me also is that local coordinator, some level of staffing. And then the bill adds a variety of pieces in Section 5 about operational guidelines and reporting and data collection and translate. Somebody's got to do this. And so I'm struggling with the concept of how any of this is going to help the problem we're seeing at the local level, which is being able to maintain enough people there to make this stuff actually happen.
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, I think you've hit on what is one of our major issues. Clearly here, we've taken a two-step approach to it. One is, this is a program that has been for for many folks within the larger Department of Human Services off the radar screen. And part of the effort within this bill is to really make it very clear. We have some disagreement in terms of what the existing statute says in terms of responsibility of the department. Our interpretation, of course, we're advocates. Our interpretation is that the existing statute requires full-time staffing to provide support to this program. We feel that it was necessary to be able to put into statute very clearly what local programs were responsible to do and what the state was responsible to do. Part of that is we have programs who are very functional at the local level, and we have programs who've been relatively unresponsive at the local level. Nine is one of those individuals I would put in the respite zealot category. She's incredible. And so the bill does not, we did not want to attach funding to this bill because we felt there needed to be some administrative changes, and we knew about the black hole in Ways and Means, and we were concerned about that, to be perfectly honest, and wanted to make sure that we could get the administrative changes to occur. The issue of the funding is of enormous concern to all of us. Clearly, people cannot, we need the administrative dollars at the local level. And again, there are discussions that are going on within the department now on how we get everyone to understand within DHS that lifespan respite means lifespan respite. It just doesn't mean seniors and people with disabilities, which is part of what happened, was simply to move the program to seniors and people with disabilities. And if it was a senior program, it provided some respite to seniors, and we want it to be seen as a department-wide program. I will guarantee you that in the next legislative session, we will come in with a very strong lifespan respite program and request for funding. We believe we need to work first within the department and reestablish all of our commitments, which does not respond to your question about the local level. At this point, we're not seeing a lot of new money coming into the local level. Unless we're able to provide technical assistance and provide prototypes for grants and things like that that could develop and provide resources, additional resources, to the administration of the local level. Because I agree, this is a significant issue.
Follow up?
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I do hear what you're saying about needing to get things lined out
get
at the state
on.
Level. But could you somehow reassure me that I'm concerned about Section 5 and additional requirements on local programs that they don't have the capability to meet unless we can be more adequately staffed?
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, I believe that most of those requirements are things that through contract local programs are supposed to be providing in terms of some of the data collection and information that is currently in contract with those programs.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Cowan, for the record, Lee Gerard. Catherine is correct. We currently have requirements in the contracts with the local organizations that they do a certain amount of developing work plans, submitting periodic reports on regarding their expenditures, who they're serving, a variety of kinds of things like that. What we're hoping with this kind of information, we've actually started to make some movement in those areas, is to provide some more consistent statewide tools that will help people, probably some along with the requirements and additional technical assistance that makes it easier and clarifies how people are to gather that information and actually makes it easier for them to do that, hopefully. So there's work to actually streamline some of the efforts and to provide some tools that will make it easier. And that's one of the things that, because of the kind of the stagnation either in local funding and also the funding issues that the department has faced over the last several biennia, we haven't had the ability to provide a lot of that support over the last 2 to 4 years. But we're actually starting to increase that support.
Final follow-up.
Thank you. I just need to say that I'm not trying to harass. I'm trying to make sure that it's in the record that the attempt of this legislation is not to put additional requirement on struggling local programs, but to clarify that we need more state support in order to allow them to function. I'm not suggesting that there weren't any requirements before and you're putting new ones there, but I think we need to strongly focus on an ability to help the programs as best we can and not ask more of them without administrative support.
An unfunded mandate.
Yes. Yes, that would be what I'm afraid of. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cowan.
Representative Olson.
I'm going to pass. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say two quick things before I ask a question. The first is, I'm sorry that we didn't get a chance to talk about this bill before this, and it's my fault, so sorry about that. And now we get a chance to talk about it in front of everybody. And the second is, this is an issue that I was not, it's the only one I was not aware of before I got here. It's one of many, and I had some constituents come in, and I'm particularly sensitive as a result of their visit to my office to aging parents with aging disabled children. Yes. And the incredible burden it puts on as everybody gets older and heavier and all those practical kinds of things. So I just hadn't thought about it, and so I like a focus on it. I like the awareness part. Here's my question. At this stage in the session, and maybe it's just my being overwhelmed, you know, sort of drinking from a fire hose, and all the bills we have, with no criticism of the content and of your purpose, my question is, when you've got a strong association led by somebody such as yourself and a seemingly good partner at the state level. Say more about the need, I think as you put it, the need for this legislation to put more focus on it. Because I want to be sure this is, and again I mean no disrespect, that this is necessary at this point in the game without the funding issues that we've talked, you know, without the funding piece of this. I just wonder if with that kind of partnership we couldn't go ahead and do all of this without legislative action.
Madam Chair, Representative Gilliam, I think it's necessary to put it in statute because people leave agencies, commitments change, the people who had the vision are not there to carry it forward. And I think what we experienced was that loss. And we believe that this is necessary to put it in statute to make this a solid and strong department-wide, not simply an aging and disability program, as I mentioned before. We know that there are respite needs in child welfare, tremendous respite needs for families who are at risk or in trouble. And we know the same is true in adult and family services. We know across the lifespan But people within the department don't think necessarily of respite and the role that respite could have in those kind of situations. So we felt that our work really needed to occur very much within the department in regaining that commitment, because we know the Niners are out there in the community trying to pull things together, but we need the leadership and the push from the department. And I think that Lee and other members in the department have struggled very hard with limited resources and reductions in staff and increased caseload to kind of carry that vision along. But just in the process of developing this bill, we have seen a real excitement from people at the department. So I really believe that this bill is important for a number of reasons. One is the department. One is to help people at the local level know that we're still around and we still care, and that we will be there to support them. And as I say again, you know, we will be back for money.
Thank you so much, both of you, for your testimony. Thank you for coming today, and I call Representative Sarah Gelser. Thank you for coming today, Representative Gelser.
Thank you for having me, Madam Chair. For the record, it's nice to meet you all. My name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state representative from Corvallis and Philomath, and I came here because I'm hoping that Representative Gilliam will ask me good questions. I wanted to highlight a couple of issues in the bill that were running through my head during that last conversation, and one of them in particular, why would we need to put this in statute, and what about those local mandates, and why did I want to be a part of sponsoring this bill? And part of it goes back to several years ago, I worked for the Department of Human Services as the Children with Disabilities and Family Support Coordinator. One of my jobs and my job description was actually to reestablish the Family Support Council, which did meet during that year while I was there. And the issue of lifespan respite became very difficult because of that question of where do you put something that serves the whole lifespan and cuts across all of these programs. When it's part of currently, in current law, this committee, this oversight committee, is part of this Family Support Council. The Family Support Council is designed to be made up of family caregivers who are caring for children or adults with a chronic disease or chronic illness or chronic disability. What we struggled with was it left out a whole other population of people that might need respite, including the crisis nurseries, folks in child welfare, foster parents, and others. It was very difficult to get at that. It was also very difficult as a subcommittee of another committee to establish this oversight group to consistently be providing the necessary technical support to these local counties. And I think if you think about how much these local coordinators struggle to provide services, the support that this advisory council gives becomes even more important. In many of these communities, these lifespan respite coordinators, they're not even full part-time positions. These are quarter positions or eighth positions that are part of a whole bunch of other programs. So it's very important to have that oversight. The other thing that's important about having a group that sets these standards that are clear that people can touch on is because this job for many, but not all, many of the lifespan respite coordinators becomes a piece of their larger job, it makes it very difficult to keep it focused on the entire lifespan. And what I found, I traveled around the state meeting with families in different counties. Families of children in many parts of the state felt that lifespan was only for seniors or elderly parents. However, we talked to some folks who were family caregivers of aging parents in other parts of the state who felt like they were neglected and the program was only for children. And what we found was it depended on which agency that local lifespan respite program was resting in. So if the person that had that piece of the job, the rest of their job was in the AAA, the Area Association on Aging, or if the rest of their job was in the Developmental Disabilities Program, obviously it was going to take on that flavor. By having a program that's set out to itself, it will be able to designate and provide that support and that framework to these coordinators about outreach to all of these different kinds of populations. The other thing that I want to mention that I think is very important about the bill is the addition of the word behavioral to that list
list of individuals who would be eligible to seek services through the Lifespan Respite Program. The other thing that's very important is that the Lifespan Respite Program isn't just about providing the stipend or the money to pay for the respite care. The most important thing that it does is provide the referral, is to collaborate and collect that database of resources of individuals that are able to provide that care. And it's very important that we be able to add to those databases those that can provide respite to those who are caring for those who have behavioral challenges. The last piece is that in Section 6, where it talks about the administrative costs for maintaining ongoing program operation, it adds technology acquisition and upgrades. One of the reasons this is so important to a program like Lifespan Respite that is all about keeping lists and making referrals is that a list of respite care providers is only good if it is current. We heard from families who would be mailed a hard copy of a list of respite providers who had moved away 2 years ago. With appropriate technology, not only will the workload be reduced because you can manage that through technology rather than someone building a list, it's going to work better for families who will stay more engaged in the process because they're not going to have to keep calling through to find someone that's still there. There's no money in this bill. I realize that. I wish that there was, but I know that it doesn't exist. But this creates the necessary framework to provide the support to those very hardworking people in local communities to provide birth to the grave, lifespan respite program. And I think we'll better help this group to quantify when they come back to us in the next legislative session exactly what is needed and where the most strategic investments can be made in ensuring access to respite across the lifespan. So I do hope that you'll support this bill. It's a good bill. Should pass.
Thank you, Representative Gilson. Any questions, Representative Gilliam?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Although I am a shy representative, I don't want to disappoint you, so I will ask you a question. My question is, we hear and see Sarah Gelser in every corner of this building, nearly 24/7. And as an ethical person that I know you are and a religious person, how do you justify human cloning?
Madam Chair, Representative Gilliam, I have only one answer to that, and that is I like eating eggs. I also like cookies, crackers, and flour products.
That is a good answer that I'll explain to the chair later.
Yeah, some of us are left in the dark.
Okay. I don't see connection.
I know, but she's good. Also, I wanted to know.
Follow up?
Yes, thank you.
Critical.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to maybe half the number of follow-ups that Representative Callan had. How is it that you're able to give testimony without breathing? No. I'd like to know, if you would, seriously, believe it or not, say more about, specifically about the broader spectrum of special needs that might come under respite. Can you do that?
I can do that. So who might be included in that whole lifespan respite? You would have everything from an infant that is medically fragile, that it's not having a babysitter, it's having someone that can do the suctioning and the repositioning through the night. It could be an adolescent that has severe behavioral or psychiatric issues where they cannot be left unattended and the parents or the caregivers need a break. It could be a 30-year-old with a severe mental illness and the parents need an opportunity once a month to have dinner alone without worrying whether or not that person is going to have a negative interaction with law enforcement if they're left unattended, even though they're in their 30s. It could be an individual in their 50s that has multiple sclerosis and the spouse needs a chance to have a break to go golf, but that person there still needs some assistance. It could be a foster care provider that is caring for a number of children in the home, and even foster care providers need a break sometimes. And it could be you caring for an elderly parent in your home that needs a break at times, or it could be you as an elderly person who is still physically able to care for your spouse who may be the same age, but you need a break sometimes as well. So there, it really is a whole range, and that's what's beautiful about the idea of respite care, and it's one of the things that's really important to me personally. I think I think as society has moved forward, we've lost our value of caregiving. I think all of us have a basic responsibility and obligation for caregiving, whether it's to our children or our spouses, our friends or our partners. And people take that very seriously, even though we don't talk about it. And it's hard work. It's not always valued work. And in order to help people to continue doing that, we need to value them by giving them a break. Those that are caring for the intensive needs in these special populations really do need that break. And that's really what Lifespan Respite is about.
Any further questions? Thank you, Representative Gelser. And we have two more witnesses. Is there anyone else who wants to testify in addition? Okay. We have Leanne Riles and Terry Urban. Is that correct, Terry?
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. Thank you for coming today.
Good morning. And it is a beautiful morning out there so far.
Lovely.
Yes, it is. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, my name is Leanne Riles, and I've been the Lifespan Respite Care Coordinator for Marion and Polk Counties for 9 years since it started. So I've been here from the very beginning here. And this was shortly after the original House bill was passed in 1997. My program is currently located at Mid-Willamette Valley Community Action Agency, so we're kind of a one-stop shopping for families for a number of different programs. But I'm also a family caregiver. I've been walking this walk as a caregiver for almost 24 years. Actually, I've been limping at times, but it's been a long haul because I have a medically fragile son who is now almost 24, and we're still dealing with issues every day. Since becoming the Lifespan Coordinator in 1998, I have worked with close to 1,000 families, caring for approximately 2,500 loved ones with special needs. And in that same time frame, I have made over 7,432 referrals for respite, and that's just for my two counties. And I'm representing a number of Lifespan Coordinators from around the state that cannot be here today. Because Lifespan serves all ages and all special needs categories, we've also develop collaborative partnerships with a number of different agencies, whether they be state or county or nonprofits or faith-based organizations in our communities. And part of this is out of necessity because a lot of us, we're serving the same families. So this includes, but we're not limited to, a local area agencies on aging, county offices for developmental disabilities, state child welfare offices, adult and family services, mental health agencies, county health departments, education service districts, senior centers, hospitals. I could go on and on. I think you kind of get the idea here. And as it is, we often, like I said, we are often serving the same families. However, at the same time, support from the State Department of Human Services has greatly diminished in the last past several years. It seems as though services across the different DHS departments or divisions have once again become very fragmented and territorial. The infrastructure funding for Lifespan has been cut to the point that many smaller counties across the state have had to either drop their Lifespan respite care programs altogether or merge them into their other programs, where sometimes they lose their identity and their focus to serve family caregivers across the lifespan.
Ms. Ross, could I invite you to move the mic a little bit further away from you?
Yeah, sorry.
There you go. Good.
I'm hearing impaired, and I have no idea how loud I am.
Oh.
I have no clue. Okay, is that better?
Yeah.
Senate Bill 648 will allow accountability and responsibility for the Lifespan program to be reconfirmed and clarified. The recent budget cuts have also greatly reduced the stipend dollars available to families pay for quality respite care. Financial hardship is one of the top three barriers to why family caregivers can't or don't access respite care. One of the hardest things I've ever had to do is to tell family caregivers, after I've been able to help them for a number of years, that there's no longer any funding available to help them pay for their very few precious hours of respite care. It breaks my heart to have to do that. In addition, the technical support from DHS has become pretty much non-existent. New Lifespan Coordinators around the state often struggle without guidance and support. That being said, the need for respite is increasing every day as more and more family caregivers are reaching out desperately for some relief. We're seeing more and more grandparents who are raising their grandchildren. We are definitely more involved with the children coming out of drug homes, meth houses, foster care, so on. And that's in addition to the seniors with Alzheimer's and other families. 10 years ago, Lifespan here in Oregon became a national model for a statewide respite care program. We need to regain that leadership status and prove that we're still capable of providing support for all of our family caregivers. The original Guiding Principles for Lifespan stated that the goal of lifespan respite care networks throughout the state is to provide access to affordable quality respite care for all Oregonians, regardless of their age or their special needs. We provide a single focal point for family caregivers to call when they need respite and other services. Help us to regain our support from the state so that Lifespan can once again grow strong and expand our respite provider training programs, technical support, caregiver classes, and respite stipends to families. I know that this is just a small step, but at least it's a step forward and backwards rather than backwards. As someone who's been with Lifespan program from the beginning, I've seen many of the ups and downs. I fully support Senate Bill 648, and I hope that all the members of this committee will also endorse this bill. There are no losers in this situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Ms. Whitman? All right. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Terry Urban, and I work for Catholic Community Services, and we are the agency that has Tillamook and Yamhill County right now for lifespan respite. Additionally, I help care for two elderly women, 86 and 97, that live in their own home. And my testimony has kind of changed after I've heard everyone speak this morning, so a lot of things have been covered. One thing personally that I can address is I am part of a team that cares for these women, and the end of January, I had multiple sclerosis, and I was out for 3 weeks. I was able to have family and friends that could help relieve me for my role in caretaking for these two women. A lot of families are in isolation, so they don't have that relief. And so when we're looking at respite for self-care, we also need to look at the crisis respite as well, and that's very important because what would a family do? I heard references to the data collection and the stress that that would have. For me, in a way, I appreciate having an agency that can identify those things that need to be measured because those are the things that will get done, and then we can have a collective voice as a state or as individuals in comparing apples with apples instead of apples and oranges and have a stronger voice when we are going for foundational or public and private funding. So I think in some respects, that is the technical assistance that we do need because there's so much to measure. Where do we start and what is the most important? With Catholic Community Services, we are leveraging a lot of energy and in-kind some dollars. As we have the lifespan respite, we are also creating a service center, if you will, that includes mentoring, because mentoring is a form of respite, and then we do a lot of respite and mentoring for foster children. So by taking the expertise of this network and the tools and the technical assistance that is already in structure there, we're able to duplicate that and weave things together to do more with less. So it's been really important for us. And so we've been able to do more wraparound services for these families. So not only would a foster family get respite, they would get mentoring. And, you know, they're almost kind of the same. So I'm just letting you know how we're leveraging our energy, our thoughts, our funds, our creativity. So it's really important for us to have that rock that we can build around instead of all these agencies going random and in different directions. So I think that's very vital. We're also participating in Tillamook County with state agencies in a pilot program with four states and a Prepare to Care because of the aging population that there is right now. What are all of us that are working 40 hours a week, how are we preparing to care for others or for even someone that may be tragically stricken down with an illness or an accident situation? What are the preparations if that happens in our families? What are we going to do? So I think that's part of the respite, too, is supporting families in keeping their loved ones at home. At Catholic Community Services, we believe in a community homes, a forever home for everyone, and that means living in a loving family in a beloved and caring community. Our first and foremost thing is family preservation, and that's the place to start. We start with healthy start on that, and lifespan respite is part of family preservation and keeping loved ones from being institutionalized, and it's very important. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Where are you from?
Catholic Community Services, Salem.
Salem office. Great. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Any questions of this witness? All right, thank you both very much for coming. John Mullen, is there anyone else here wishes to testify? Nice to see you again, John.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. I hadn't initially thought about testifying, but I thought I would add a couple of very quick comments for the committee. As Director of Clackamas County Social Services, before I retired, we had our programs involved elderly people with disabilities, low-income people and individuals in general. And we thought about the opportunity a number of years ago to put the program together, the Lifespan Respite Program, along with the caregiving program that was available under the Older Americans Act. And one of the things that I thought about as we were going through our decision-making, we first worked with all of our three citizen boards, and all of them came back with the understanding that this was a really vitally important program. One of the things I think people forget or don't think about is that we're all, of course, born into this world helpless, and we need somebody to take care of us. And we will have the good fortune and the difficulty, many of us, in other parts of our lives to be on the other end where we're providing care. It's a struggle. It's also an opportunity to show love and caring for an individual. But when we thought about what we wanted to do in Clackamas County, and I suppose we have one of the zealots too, but I didn't quite think of it that way, but in a similar kind of way, I said what we needed more than anything was to establish a movement within the county so that people would become aware, be involved, be engaged. For a while, we had some mental health funding and some funding from the Office for Children and Families, but because of the challenges of budget cuts, some of that funding became eroded over time and actually is no longer there from those two agencies. And so we looked at, as the way we look at oftentimes looked at programs, as both the outreach to the community and in-reach is a term that I use about how we can use some of our resources in the agency differently. We use the client employed provider program, the senior companion program, our volunteer program as a way of providing additional resources. We also had a private nonprofit and still in existence that would raise money and we would write foundation grants. But I think why this bill is so important is that it draws attention to the program that frankly needs additional attention. One of the things that I was concerned about when you all got together for the special session to rebalance DHS's budget, I was concerned and talked about the fact that the lifespan respite was not included in that rebalance, and it received a slight cut in the scheme of things, but it just didn't come up to the level of attention at the department level to balance that program by asking for the funds necessary to at least hold it harmless. So I very much appreciate the discussion here this morning, the concern about the local programs and how they can survive and make best use of their time and effort and all that. But I think that I would just close by saying that I really thank Catherine White for bringing this forward and for Representative Gelser and others involved in this, because I'm hoping to see at the state level what we envisioned in Clackamas County is for this to be a movement and respite and caregiving issues really be highlighted at the state level.
Thank you very much, John. Any questions of this witness? All right. Thank you very much. Anyone else who wishes to speak? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing.
Oh, I wanted to move dash sevens on this.
Okay. I think we need you outside in the hall. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill of 648A and open up a work session on Senate Bill 648A. Colleagues, I think this is a very good bill. It is so frustrating hearing about wonderful programs, and I know why they didn't ask for funding, because it will go into the black hole of ways and means. We've heard about these kinds of programs through the 7 years I've been in this building, and there's never enough money, and I always... Even though I think we do good work, it always feels like it's not enough. It's not enough. But I'm glad we're doing this. I think we're going to be doing it this morning. I'm glad we're doing this. I'm glad Representative Gelser's worked on this, and I know several senators also have worked on this. I think it's a necessary thing to do to be prepared when hopefully there will be some federal money. Hopefully eventually we'll get some state money into this. Having lived in a home with an Alzheimer's patient, I'm aware of what it means to get out. I mean, that I raised, as I know all of you have too, have raised children. I mean, that's nothing like having an Alzheimer's patient. It is just very, very difficult. And, you know, the lifespan, I think, is such an important concept here that we need to make sure that we're granting respite for families. And everybody wants to be in their own homes and wants their loved ones to be in their own homes. So we need as much as possible to enable families to do this. So with that, I will accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 648 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves that Senate Bill 648, A, engrossed, to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any further discussion? I guess I have my share of discussion. Any other discussion? All right, Susan, you call the roll, please.
Representative
Allen?
Aye.
Representative
Gelser?
Aye.
Representative
Gilman?
Aye.
Representative
Purple? Excused.
Mallory?
Excused.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Chair Tomei?
Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, Senate Bill 6048A passes. And Representative Gelser, will you carry this? Thank you. With that, I will close the House Committee on Human Services and wait. Oh, we have no meeting on Monday, the 21st. The next meeting is Wednesday, the 23rd. We don't have a lot of bills, but some of them are sort of coming in dribs and drabs, so we'll be dealing with them as they come in. So with that, I will close the House meeting, committee meeting on Human Services and Women's Wellness. Thank you all.